Hello, Abstract Concepts. You're listening to the Dare Daniel podcast, where you send us your most sinister movie dares, and we suffer the consequences for your amusement. I'm Corky McDonald, betrayer of friends, and with me, as always, is Daniel Barnes, the film critic for the Sacramento News and Review, and a member of the San Francisco Film Critics Circle.
Hi, everyone. As Corky said, on this show, we do your dirty work by watching the most unwatchable movies that you can imagine, and then we review and rate them on our unique system. Your run-of-the-mill bad film, your everyday average bad film, that's just a dare. We give a double dare to the truly atrocious movies, those next-level bad. And the reverse dare is for a despised movie, like Can't Stop the Music, that is actually really, really good.
Today on the podcast, we'll be reviewing David Frankel's 2016 film Collateral Beauty, starring Will Smith, Edward Norton, and Kate Winslet. But before we get started, Daniel also writes a craft beer column for the Sacramento Bee. So, Dan, tell us a little bit about this beer you brought for us today.
So the beer I brought today, once again, I think this is like the third or fourth revision brewing beer from Sparks, Nevada. Although this is a different style, I brought us a blonde ale.
Ooh.
5.5% ABV. It's called Revision Blonde NV. I'm not usually a big fan of blonde ales, but I actually really like this one. It has a nice light malty taste, but the color and the crispness of the aftertaste are kind of more reminiscent of a lager. So it's just a really crack one open there. It's a good, easy drinking, refreshing kind of beer, very sessionable. You could drink a few of these.
Good idea, because I'm going to need more than a few beers to wash a taste of Collateral Beauty from this boca. Speaking of which, today's dare was sent to us by Jesse Davis, because I want the two of you to suffer for my entertainment.
Well, Jesse, you're in luck, because that's just what we did, is suffer.
Congratulations, Jesse.
Hopefully you are entertained by this week's movie, Collateral Beauty, 14 on Rotten Tomatoes, 23 on Metacritic. Had a production budget of $36 million, which, you know, this is not like, it's not like a terrible looking movie. Like, it's competent looking, it's professional looking, and it has a ton of stars in it. So
that's
super low.
Yes, right.
I have to wonder if everybody just got like back end points on this movie and like the studio just got totally killed. It only grossed, however, $31 million in the United States, $88 million worldwide. It was released on December 16th, 2016 on a little over 3,000 screens, opened in fourth place.
Wow.
Corky, I you know, cutting to the chase, I thought this movie was, you know, and I'm going to use a clinical term here, a catastrophe of the shittiest order.
Absolutely.
I want to ask you, where in this catastrophe, where do you find the collateral beauty?
First off, if you could define what Collateral Beauty even is, then you've done more than the movie does. Collateral Beauty is one of those things like you see sometimes like these words tweeted out or on Instagram, be somebody's beautiful tragedy.
Right.
Which is just such word soup.
It's just nothing. Nonsense, right?
Yeah.
It's just gibberish. Or as this movie says, what is your why?
What? Yeah, there's more.
What is your why? This movie is like a sympathy card has become sentient and is aggressively attacking you with non-beliefs.
My favorite is, life is about people.
Like, well, yeah, no shit, man.
Everything like, you know is encompassed in
right,
life, dude.
Absolutely. Yeah, so a pretty horrible movie, I would say. Like, because there's no story. Mm-mm. There's essentially just character dynamics. And I think that what's interesting about this movie is that for all of the ridiculousness of the plot and the batshit craziness of the twist, it is painfully telegraphed, every single one of those twists in like opening seconds. Like, you would have to be a moron not to actually like get the twists at the end.
Yeah,
but at the same time, they're completely bonkers. So let's get right into it.
Let's go right into it. All right, so we start with a very successful advertising agency. Edward Norton is giving everybody kudos and awards.
Yeah, he's giving them like the end of the year speech.
Yep.
Or whatever. He introduces his partner, well, one of his partners. Kate Winslet and Michael Pena are also partners in this advertising firm, as we find out. But it seems like Will Smith is kind of the engine that makes it go, and he and Norton have this really special relationship.
Yeah, they might as well have named him Howard Draper. You can tell this guy, Howard, is the partner.
He's the man.
Yeah.
He's the man. He's introduced as the poet philosopher of product. These are fucking lines of the movie.
Yeah. He gives up. He starts talking about, what is your why?
Yeah.
Life is about people.
He's given an inspirational speech.
Yeah.
This is the first of hundreds of inspirational speeches in this movie.
And he starts telling them that there's three abstractions that connect everybody and everything.
Yeah.
Love, time, and death.
Yes. These are the three things that connect anything. And in case you didn't catch it, he says it again, says it while counting off with his fingers, love, time, death. These three things. Love, time, death. The movie essentially, like a book report would, like a child writing a book report, essentially states its thesis in the opening, in the opening paragraph.
And you have a word count, so you have to pad it out.
You have to pad it out, keep repeating it, right? And then the movie essentially does like a love portion, a time portion, and a death portion, and then in the end wraps it up.
And if you are in doubt at all about the wisdom of his words, don't worry. We have cut shots of everybody else nodding in agreement.
Yeah, they are just blown away by
sage advice.
Right? Yeah. They love this guy.
3 years later, we see a considerably older-looking Will Smith in his office setting off a domino rally.
Yeah, he looks very miserable. He looks very... He's gray. He looks just like...
He's got the sad Will Smith face going from Bright.
Absolutely.
But...
It's 3 years. It's been 3 years after this. Something happened in that time, and he's totally unresponsive. He doesn't talk to anyone. He doesn't, you know, interact with anyone. He doesn't offer anything to himself.
We learn all this in a staircase sitting exposition scene.
Yeah, exactly.
With Edward Norton, Kate Winslet, and Michael Pena. Where we learn that Edward Norton owns 40%, Will Smith 60% of the company. So they can't really edge him out.
Yeah. They have an offer to sell. The company has gone downhill because Will Smith is not interacting with any of his clients. He's just playing with dominoes all day long.
Yeah.
So they have an offer to sell, and they want to convince Will Smith to do something, but he's completely unresponsive.
The name of the company giving him that offer to buy? Omnicon. Which is something so out of like RoboCop. We find out that Howard's kid died.
Norton decides he's going to hire a detective because he wants to document that Will Smith is not mentally well. Therefore, he's not fit to run the company, and then they'll be able to rest his shares. Reminded that he's not just their business partner. It is made very clear they are family.
They
basically
were great friends.
Tight friends. And not just him and Norton. All four of them.
Yes.
They consider themselves more family than like friends, right?
Correct.
As they're discussing this about like, is this the right thing to do to hire a detective to like spy on our friend to like steal his company from him while he's still grieving for his dead daughter? Michael Pena says, when something starts with a six-year-old dying, nothing is going to feel right. And what's insane, and here's why this movie is completely insane, this is given as a reason why they should spy on their friend, not a reason to be like, hey, wait a minute, we're monsters, because a six-year-old died, but it's more like, hey, a six-year-old died, all fucking bets are off, man. Like, anything goes at this point.
We see Will Smith, he's dreaming about his daughter, he's movie depressed, which means he still looks great, except kind of he has a dour expression.
Yeah, he just looks like he's about to cry.
Yes, that's it. He's writing letters that he puts into a mailbox, and we see the private investigator in a rickshaw, because the movie has a little bit of quirk to it.
Oh boy, does it.
Goes right up to the mailbox, snaps a picture on her iPhone, and then tells the driver, go, go, go.
That's like right out of Can't Stop the Music, is it?
The movie treats taking pictures on your iPhone or filming things with your phone as if it's something you have to hide. You see that, go outside, you'll see somebody doing that right this moment.
So, like, the detective steals the mail out of the mailbox. She
like,
makes a key. She
admits
a federal crime.
Yes.
Yeah, admits it.
And now it's a conspiracy because she's involved the three partners.
They have involved them, too. Yeah, right? We also see, like, when he's writing these, or about to send these letters for the first time, before we know it's to Love, Time, and Death, that he's reading The Hidden Reality, which is this book about, like, alternate dimensions and stuff like that.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah. The Collateral Beauty Reading List. Okay, so there's one. There's one. The letters are pure doggerel, but of course, everyone is like, oh my God, he's pouring his heart out.
Well, not everyone. Kate Winslet is the one who really takes this to heart.
Oh, of course. Well, she's got that mother instinct.
Does she? Because I don't know if that's the movie's going to bring that out. She goes and feels bad, so she goes and tries to feed Will Smith and send him food. She talks outside his door and leaves him some food because he's not responding. And a very inappropriately expository landlord comes out and reveals he's not paying his rent. He doesn't eat any food.
Yeah.
And
it's funny is that he first says, don't leave that food there. He's not eating anything. And then the scene ends with him saying, like, I'll take that food. That last food was really good. It's like, why don't you just tell her to like leave the food? Like,
right?
I'll give him the food. It's great.
Matter of fact, he said he wanted steak next time.
I know, right? And she's like, ah, this food should have gone to waste.
After that first scene, Will Smith doesn't talk for the next 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's true.
Ed Norton, we find out, because now we start following the other characters.
Yeah,
in the movie.
So we're getting everyone, and this is, everyone gets the one thing.
Yes.
Right? They all get one thing. Even Will Smith basically gets one thing. You know what I mean?
Before you know that Love, Time, and Death play characters in this movie, the movie is telling you that
Love, Time, and Death are playing huge parts in these people's lives. So here we are, Ed Norton.
Yeah.
His daughter, he's estranged from his daughter because he cheated on his wife, and now they've divorced, and the daughter hates him. So he's feeling an absence of love in his life.
His daughter is a shitty person.
She's pretty awful.
She's
right?
a shitty
she's
person.
She's just like, fuck you, Dad.
She's, I'm hanging out with OBJ. You know?
I know, right? She's like rubbing his nose in
it. We already saw Hamilton, Dad. Fuck off. She tries to give him money as he leaves.
Right.
Don't spend it all in one place, Dad. No, but she flat out tells him, I hate you.
Yeah,
I don't
I'm not
going to
spend
you.
Christmas with you. This is a Christmas movie, obviously.
Yes.
This is like so non-denominational Christmas. You know what I mean? This is like non-denominational spirituality.
The set decorating, I don't know what you would call it. This is your term.
Toronto chic. I don't know. Like the New York filmmaking in
it's
here
Toronto
is
come
garbage.
Manhattan. Yeah.
It's total garbage. There's like two scenes where you're like, oh, they must have shot that in New York City.
They shot it right under Brooklyn Bridge in that one spot everybody sees.
Yeah, and then they shot one in Central Park with the bridge. And then everything else is like clearly Toronto, Vancouver, or wherever.
There's one scene that's the movie poster from Woody Allen's Manhattan, and then there's every other scene that's actually Toronto. But no, the look is Christmas commercial where there's a red bow on the car in the driveway.
Right.
That's the whole look of this movie.
Yeah, Hallmark Hall of Fame.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, that's what this movie is. It is a rich person's Hallmark Hall of Fame movie.
Absolutely.
So in addition to Norton not having enough love, Kate Winslet worries, maybe I don't have enough time because she's looking at sperm donors and she is, you know, 40-ish. So
it is the most random, just inserted shot of her looking
click,
on her
click,
work
click,
laptop
yeah, like,
at sperm donor sites.
I'm at work here. And then we don't actually get this for a little while longer, but Michael Pena's thing is that he's fearing death.
Right.
Which is love time death, remember? Because he is coughing. Which means he's going to die.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We don't get that yet, but once we hear the cough of death.
Just any random cough, like if someone coughs for like a non-plot purpose, you know, like if it's just in a scene, they're coughing, like, oh, you're fucking dead.
Yeah,
dude.
You are not going to be around.
You
at
are
the end.
Dead. Like, get your shit in order.
Ed Norton is walking through the office. There's a roll call for actresses for an ad, and Keira Knightley says the line, but incorrectly. He stops to correct her. She points out, no.
My way's better.
My way's better.
Yeah, they got a little meet cute going on.
And she says, it hits you here, points at her heart, which telegraphing who she's going to play in this movie.
And
is
what's
tied?
Funny
is...
Is
she deaf? No. All right.
Her line that she comes up with for his commercial is, this is for like a vacation, like a cruise line or something like this. Shed your skin. Shed your skin. Like, what is, are like serial killers the market for this? Like, who is, shed your skin.
So, was she a great big fat girl?
Did that fat girl shed her skin, then go on a cruise? So right in the middle of this, he's like, shed your skin. That's
brilliant. Yeah.
Okay, so he runs
Buffalo
in.
Bill's
and like,
gonna love this.
He like runs in, says, change it, shed your skin, runs back. She's taken off.
She bounces out of her audition.
Right, she's in the middle of the line. She takes off. He chases after her, which, as you do.
Because he can follow her because she's wearing a red hat. He follows her through busy Manhattan streets. I love this part. She walks into some nondescript theater where Helen Mirren and some young actor are on stage. Walks right on stage, and it's automatically
and
her
start
line.
Performing a scene, like just some random. And they're not, it's nonsense. There's no interaction or anything.
Yeah, no, none. And but her timing on that walk to
was just
taking
like,
off
walk
her coat
right in and start the scene in this empty, like closed down, abandoned theater.
A theater troupe of Helen Mirren, Keira Knightley, and a teenage actor.
Yeah, a young African-American teenager. His name's Jacob Lattimore.
Okay, Jacob Lattimore. He offers, Ed Norton, sorry, who's playing Wit, offers to pay for their play. He doesn't know how he's going to pay for it, but he's just so inspired by what Keira Knightley did in her audition and this thing.
Yeah, well, he's thinking, you know, if I manage to sell this company, I would love to, like, I see every play. I've never heard of this play before. I want to see it. I want to put it on, you know, so if I get money, I'll invest in it.
My daughter told me to eat shit on the Hamilton tickets. So he's at home watching TV with this crazy mom who tells him that the werewolves are outside.
Yeah, she's got to mention, they're watching TV and it's a show and he's like, there's a CSI Cleveland now? Like, that's a joke in this movie. Like, that's a certain, and not as like, there is a CSI Cleveland and his joke is like, what? There it exists, right?
Yeah.
That is just such the like, first attempt joke, right?
Yeah.
CSI Cleveland, what's next? NCIS. Cleveland or
Columbus?
NYPD Cleveland.
But my favorite line of dialogue in the whole movie is actually from the CSI dialogue that they're listening to. But what's a respectable neurosurgeon doing in a crack house? I don't know. That's way more interesting than anything happens in this movie.
This part of the movie seems to be like David Frankel, just to like give a little backstory on the director of the movie. He did like Devil Wears Prada.
Okay.
This is not like in his wheelhouse necessarily. And it seems as though this is David Frankel inserting a little bit of himself in here. A little bit of David Frankel humor in there, which is just painful.
His mom is crazy. He indulges her craziness, which we find out later he was taught
to go into her reality.
To go into her reality.
Correct it. So just indulge the mentally ill. So then he explains his plan, which is he wants to humanize the abstractions of love, time, death that are so important to Howard, aka Will Smith, and hire these actors to essentially play love, time, and death and answer the questions in Howard's letters, to actually go up to him on the street and pretend to be these people.
And originally, it seems like an idea to help Howard, to be like therapeutically good for him.
They kind of talk about how they've tried everything else at this point. They've tried interventions. They've tried therapy. They've tried
ayahuasca.
They tried ayahuasca. They tried they tried all sorts of things. And nothing's worked. So no. I think her rationale, which is a shitty rationale, is, well, we've tried everything, so let's try hiring a private detective to follow him around while actors playing these abstractions who live only in his head try to convince him that they really exist in
while
the world.
While we do this horribly betraying thing to our friend and mentor.
So that will steal the company from him.
Yeah.
After the scene where Knightley essentially lures Norton to this abandoned theater and they put on their show and he sees it and is amazed by it and he leaves, Helen Mirren is there and she says, good job, right? So this was sort of their plan all along.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
It also is very important that like everything in this movie is utterly false. Like the dialogue is false, all the characters feel false, the emotions feel false. So there's no feeling at all when any of this is happening that like, oh, these are really like actors who are doing this thing. Like you said, it just seems so phony and staged from the very beginning that like something's a little off here.
Yeah. What's funny is this is now where they get their plan of attack. They divvy out who the roles are. And
yeah, who's going to be who? And Helen Mirren says, well, who's going to play love, time, and death? Let's see. Look at Keira Knightley. Love. Look at the young man. Time. Death. Because I'm fucking old? You know what I mean?
And if you have a 70-year-old who doesn't reek of death, I mean, Helen Mirren is that. She's like absolutely legit sexy at 70, you know?
I mean, if you want an idea of how, like, insane Hollywood is in their treatment of women, I mean, how about the fact that, like, Kate Winslet, pretty much universally recognized as an extremely beautiful, sexy, desirable
gorgeous
woman, is always cast as the frumpy one.
Right.
And Helen Mirren, who is still very sexy and vibrant, is death.
Yes.
Because her womb is barren.
Kate Winslet is going through her middle life biological clock crosses. Ed Norton is trying to crush Keira Knightley.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right? Like half his fucking age. It's just insane. It's just like the standards that we have as a society and as just as human beings versus the imaginary standards that exist in the movie universe.
Right.
What is beautiful, what is old, you know, what is what's morally acceptable, like even the kind of morality of this movie is just fucking bonkers.
All right, so this has been Woke Corner with Corky and Daniel. What's also hilarious is that apparently he only wrote three letters. He only, and they just happened to time it just perfectly.
With when they were like surveilling him. Yes, I know.
That rickshaw was in the right place at the right
Nailed
time.
Nailed it. She is a really good detective.
She is. She's a great detective. So we also have a New York City bicycling montage, which never since Quicksilver has bicycling through New York City been so boring. Now we start to find out that the characters playing the roles of love, time, and death aren't just playing characters.
Right. They're really getting into it, right?
Yes,
because they've been paired off
yes
with love, has been paired off with Edward Norton, who, remember, leads love.
Yep.
Time has been paired off with Kate Winslet, who is worried of running out of time. And death has been paired off with Michael Pena, who, as we will find out,
this is when he coughs.
He coughs, and you're like, oh, he's going to die. So, once again, love, time, death, love, time, death, love, time, death, love, time, death.
It's so funny when they start to meet with people, like Kate Winslet meets with Time in her office. Michael Pena meets with Death in a coffee shop. Ed Norton is on a date with Love. They like,
right, I know.
This was when I was just writing "ugh" really big on my...
Yeah, no,
my
seriously, notes. Because they're going into this plan, which, once again, their plan is to have these people play the roles of love, time, and death, to make it seem as though no one can see them except for Will Smith.
That's right. They give the device
going. They have the letters. They're going to like answer his questions. They're going to talk to him and hopefully bring him out.
Yeah.
That's just absurd, like, right there. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that kind of bowfinger premise.
Nobody stopped.
It's just insane.
And said, oh, you actually do that to your mom, dude? You actually fucking engage her in her inner dementia?
Yeah, like...
We're not doing that.
No, yeah, let's not do that. That's a bad idea, right?
We get a familiar Dare Daniel movie trope, which is a window-watching scene where someone silently stares inside of a window to watch something happen, and it's supposed to evoke, the snowman did it, Aloha did it. And you could say Dark Tower kind of did it.
Yeah.
When he's staring into the misfires. And I love when you brought up how Matthew McConaughey just references the guns. You know, his guns were by King Arthur's. Just like a random tidbit fact. But Will Smith stares through a window at this group therapy where it's obvious people are talking about their dead children.
Yeah.
Our first meeting with an abstract, death comes to visit Will Smith at the dog park that he likes to go sit at. And every time you meet one of these abstracts, it starts out of focus shot.
They wander in, and her costuming for death is purple boa and a purple hat.
You saw purple, I saw blue. Death means different things to us all, Daniel. Stop. It's amazing. Will Smith's first words since the opening of the movie he's spoken, he starts yelling and telling this, who to him would be a random crazy woman, though does have his letter.
She's got his letter, she knows what's in the letter.
Yeah, and is insisting that she's death. And he starts talking to her. The PI is hired to walk by with a child and say, why is that man yelling at nobody?
Exactly.
To reinforce that nobody else can see them. Just
also, we're bringing children into this.
Yeah. Well, this PI has no morals. She's invaded rickshaws, the mail. Helen Mirren is talking with Michael Pena about how she did and that he believed her. He really believed her. And this was one part that I thought was kind of funny is that Helen Mirren is still an actress. So she's like, what did they say about me? You know, like she needs the feedback that an actor would. I thought that was kind of a funny bit.
So after that encounter with death, Will Smith is kind of shaken. He kind of wanders into this group therapy meeting. He's sort of hovering around where a mom in therapy is saying that her child's last words to her, child had her suitcase packed.
A blue suitcase.
Had a blue suitcase.
Death is blue.
In the hospital. That's right. Shut up. And the mom says that the child said, Mom, I'm not going to our house. I'm going home. And he died. And it's just like, you just feel gross hearing that stuff, right? Like, it's just, not that like their pain shouldn't exist, but like, this movie just wallows in it. It just like rubs it all over itself.
It fucking just lathers
like,
itself.
Lathers itself in stuff like this. And it's
shed your skin, lather like, in death.
Oh man, you feel that mother grieving. Oh man. Oh. Mm.
Well, another Dare Daniel trope. This was the first Corky cry mark of the movie. I was crying at that moment about the mother talking about her child.
Yes, of course.
It's so Pavlovian. This movie is,
oh, fucking shameless, right?
It's appointment crying. It's This Is Us, you know? And the name of that support group is the Smallest Wings Support Group, which is just, come on. Because children are little angels. But you know what? Will Smith, after looking at that group therapy meeting, he's back on his bullshit, which means his domino rallies. He's got those things set back up.
Right. But before he takes off, he's kind of sitting, he sits down actually for a moment, and then he's questioned about his daughter by the counselor and takes off. Decides, I can't handle it. The counselor meets him after the meeting and is like, hey, I've seen you hanging around here a lot. You know, like, what's going on? And is asking him some questions about, like, who are you and what are you doing and all that. She seems like really interested, almost like a little too aggressively interested.
Yeah. Asks him to say his daughter's name, which he cannot do. He just refuses to utter that word.
She's actually, I mean, she eventually says, like, okay, you know, you don't have to answer these questions. But after peppering him with like half a dozen, like, extremely personal, harsh questions, does she say, you know what? It's fine to not talk.
So now we meet the second of our abstracts as Howard goes to his office and there's a fuzzy person and time challenges him.
Yeah, he's time's angry. Yeah. Time, you challenge me with your questions. You said I suck.
Yeah. And as woke as we were being earlier, to get the young black guy to play the angry character in the movie. You know what I mean? I kind of get it because it's Will Smith is a black guy, so it's like his younger version of him.
Yeah,
maybe.
Sure.
But still, that just felt a little...
the whole movie is...
But the most disrespectful thing, he knocks down some of his dominoes.
Knocks some dominoes down, bro.
This Will Smith loses his shit. Yeah.
And Kate Winslet comes in and once again pretends, even though she's the only one who is supposedly morally opposed to any of this, pretends to not see... Time in his office, like, really sells it, too.
So did they tell everybody in this office, hey, if you see a young...
Yeah, like, if you see this guy, just pretend he doesn't exist.
Right.
Like, what if he throws a shadow on me? It's fine.
So now Love comes and meets Will Smith in the diner. Keira Knightley walks in and she's instantly crying. Just tears. Right.
She's already ready to go.
And he smiles, he's still sad face. Will Smith smiles at her, and then she puts down the letter that she's love, and he's like, oh, what the fuck, you know?
So yeah, he's had encounters with all three. He was kind of annoyed by all three, but they believe that the actors believe that he believed them, that they really are love, time, and death.
And this is where we first get them openly discussing, we're going to film this and use it to get the company.
Yeah, so like this is their ultimate plan, which is they were like, okay, you know, you did a good job. Good job. Like he believes your love, time, and death. But like what we really need is we need you to provoke a reaction, okay? Because we're going to have that detective and she's going to film it and we're going to film the reaction. And then what we're going to do is we're going to digitally remove love, time, and death from the images, so it will just be Will Smith talking to no one.
So they did say that.
They said that. Okay. Yes. Their whole plan was we're going to digitally remove them from these images, right? Yeah. So if that's the plan, you don't need to hire someone to play love, time, and death. You can have him talking to literally anyone and just remove them from the fucking image.
He can order coffee and you can erase the whole Starbucks.
And if you think, hey, these are non-professionals. These are just people. These are actually people with like money problems and stuff. Like, that's ILM level shit to just remove someone from an image and not have any issues with like borders, latency, shadows, like people blocking other people. Like, you have backgrounds that need to be filled in. You have all like a lot of digital like reconstruction needs to happen on this. But maybe if you're thinking that can't happen, oh, you're wrong.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Because we'll get to it. Maybe that's why Helen Mirren wears blue.
That's right. She's like, I can be anything. Amy, yeah, or Love, is the Love. Only person who is like claims to be morally outraged by this and kind of storms off and is like, I won't do it.
The therapy leader, Will Smith, they kind of have a little connection going.
Yeah, he goes back again. He talks about, I know bereavement hallucinations exist.
Yeah.
Which I've never heard of that, but whatever. They need to have a conversation.
She's our grief statistics guide. She's telling us about the 79% of couples that don't survive.
And that comes out so naturally.
Oh, so naturally.
Are you part of the 79%? The what? The 79% of couples who divorce after a tragedy. Like, this is very awkward. Awkward how you said that.
They start describing their exes to each other.
And he says, I don't know what love is anymore. This is the fucking kind of drivel that is throughout this movie. And she talks about her husband and her child and how her child was 6 years old and died of a rare form of cancer. And her husband divorced. And then eventually her husband handed her a card one day. A letter. And in the letter, it just said, if only we could be strangers again.
Right.
Ah.
It's fucking leaden.
Yes. It's so brutal, right?
It anvil like, drops these plot points too.
Well, I wonder where this is going, right? And you're just like, the only thing is like, oh, could it really be this stupid? Could it really be this fucking stupid? And yeah.
So at 56:35 in the movie, we get our title. She tells him a story about noticing collateral beauty.
Yes.
Tells him a story about when she's sitting there waiting for her daughter to die. Like, cut back to that time.
Yeah, we don't see the stranger.
No, but we see that she's wearing...
It's an old woman.
She's wearing blue.
She's wearing a little blue.
She tells her, don't forget to notice the collateral beauty. Will Smith, and that's another thing this movie does. It calls itself out on its bullshit a lot. Mm-hmm. And he's like, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
That's nonsense. I don't know. He's like, I'm not feeling your collateral beauty.
She's like, let me explain it to you. And then proceeds to not explain anything about it.
In this scene, they say the words collateral beauty at least 10 times in the same scene. She's just like, collateral beauty? Yeah, collateral beauty. What's collateral beauty? Well, collateral beauty. Like, hammer it home. Hammer it the fuck home.
It's like somebody who puts Marilyn Monroe pictures on their Instagram page would love the thought collateral beauty. He tells her it's no such thing, and he says this was a bad idea.
Now we see Ed Norton again, and he is like, we got to have one more scene. We got to have, like, he really is going to complete the whole thing, which is like...
He's basically, he wants to fuck her, is what he's trying to do. He's like, we got to have something.
He wants love.
Yes.
He wants love.
Ah, and she makes him start talking about his daughter.
And he starts talking about his daughter, and she's like, well, tell love about your daughter. And he tells a story about how when his daughter came out, he... didn't understand love, but now he is love.
I had become love.
He had become love. I have become destroyer of worlds.
Fear no mortals beyond me. The Omnicom.
So she decides that's fine. She's like, I'll, you know, he offers her literally like $1 million. Like $1 million. He offers her $1 billion.
She's like, you don't have $1 million.
And he's like, I'll get it. Fuck it. And she's like, okay, I'll do it. But you have to love your daughter. And he's like, deal. Now they're in the part where they're going to start filming him on the street. So Time accosts him once again. He's riding his bike. Time skates up and like grabs the
Marty
back
McFly
of,
style grabs Marty the back McFly of his bike
and is like, "You son of a bitch! Time's great."
Nobody on the streets of New York notices this man falling in the middle of the street.
No one.
And another man on a bicycle, they're yelling. Maybe that happens all the time in New York.
Yeah, probably.
They're yelling at each other, or Will Smith is yelling at him.
Yeah, he just starts ranting about Time and go to hell Time.
Yeah, right? And then we have him on, he's going down to the subway. His bike, nowhere, to be found.
This is how I go to work. I bike part of the way, leave it nowhere, and then I'm on the subway.
Will Smith, sad face. Death comes up to him at the train station, tells him she's going to ride the F train with him. Goes in and starts kind of pushing him about his daughter, and he starts freaking out on her.
Starts ranting again. Yeah, on the train. Says, you know, death is a lie, and row, row, he sings row, row, row your boat.
He starts singing it.
And you see the detective shooting him with her smartphone through all of this.
She's filming behind Helen Mirren.
That's what's so fucking insane. This is what I'm saying. Like, this is Weta Industrial Light and Magic level special effects that you would need to do this. Like, she's blocking him in the frame. You would have to digitally reconstruct all of him to, like, get him in the shot.
And every movement of every other person that's also
every
she's
person. If they're on a subway.
You're right. This is Peter Jackson years
seriously
in
like
to the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Like, we were going to make this movie in 2008, but the special effects hadn't caught up with us yet.
And then another perfectly timed rant, because as soon as he's done his stop, he walks off. I wish that thing would have went, like he would have stopped, and then it would have been like three more stops. They're just standing there. They had to digitally remove a ton of shit.
No, Kim comes right out, and there is love waiting for him, and that starts more ranting, and how he says, "You betrayed me," and she, bringing it full circle, baby, says, "I am the only why." Damn.
The woman, the PI, was following him on the train. He storms off. Nobody else got off at that stop.
I know.
And now Keira Knightley is perfectly situated on the stop above. How did this
get
filmed?
He doesn't break stride. No. He walks right off, and yet she's just right there still filming.
So they had other cameras set up in remote locations to capture. Oh, God.
And right after the scene ends, we have the scene of Howard now being shown in this majestic office, this meeting room that has this bank of like a half a dozen large screen
TVs. It's a media center.
It is insane. It's like, this is an advertising company, you
guys.
This
is why your company's like, going under.
Yeah, right? Like, hey, guys, like, have we checked the books? Have we just checked the books? So anyway, he's watching these videos where now, amazingly, Love, Time, and Death have all been digitally removed from the images.
It's obviously Will Smith recreating those scenes by himself.
By himself? There's no shadows.
He doesn't really throw a skateboard.
He doesn't throw. He just throws nothing. And he looks at it, and he's sort of like, he sort of immediately understands that, like, they've been fucking with him, and they've been filming with him and all this kind of stuff. Claire breaks down and apologizes. And now Howard, after walling himself off for several years and basically running the company into the ground, abandoning his wife and doing just all sorts of horrible things by basically doing nothing.
Yeah.
Has now takes the opportunity to seize the moral high ground, and now he gets to deliver the speech about how you could have been nicer to me, and you know, you didn't need to lie to me, and all this. Like, yeah, they did, man. Like, fucking A.
But he also now delivers everybody's truth. Claire, you've made us your family. You didn't start your own.
Yeah.
Simon,
you're not
dying,
a complete
dude.
Woman. Yeah, Simon, you're going to die.
Claire, your baby maker is empty.
Ed Norton, go reconcile with your daughter. And it's like, how'd you even know about the daughter thing? That's really recent. Like, they didn't share that with you. You literally haven't talked to any of them, but he just somehow, like...
He knew his friend was a shitty dad.
Spiritually, he's just like, you were a shitty dad 3 years ago. Pretty sure you're still garbage now.
But he tells them he forgives them all,
and
he understands.
He actually says, you guys did the right thing.
No.
No matter what, they didn't do the right thing. No. That's for sure. That's a for sure thing.
We can understand their motivation.
Right.
But it was an awful,
bad
awful thing.
Yeah. Bad thing. This movie just has some really generally fucked up ideas about what is right, what is healthy, what is good for people who are grieving.
Yeah.
You know, like, people who are grieving don't want your fucking like advice. You know what I mean? They don't want your stories. They don't want your bullshit.
He even says people don't know what to say to you in that situation. And it's like, yeah. And then you build this whole movie about how because people don't know what to say to you that they're going to fuck you over. But he sells his company and he's also
signed. Yeah, so he decides to sign all the papers. He's even going to sign the papers saying that his daughter is dead, which he refused to sign.
So we have one last meeting with all our abstracts because they got to get their payoffs. Claire goes to pay off Time. She tells him that she's not going to have kids. And he's like, children don't come from you. They go through you. Are we back to Buffalo Bill type shit?
I know, right? This is a sick
film. Oh, yeah, you're my mom. You're a great big fat mom. Wit goes to see his kid, who is still shitty to him.
Yeah, she's still pretty bad.
She's an awful person.
Yeah.
But he tells her, look, I'm going to come visit you. I'm going to be your dad. And she's like, you're stalking me. He's like, yes. She's like, okay. Stalk me tomorrow on a minimum day.
Mm-hmm. And Death and Michael Pena have like a final scene. It's like all this business is being resolved. It was just torturous because you're like, oh my God, there's like this dynamic needs to be resolved. And then there's like five more dynamics. And you're like, there's the daughter. And then there's the this. And then,
and none of them were really actually resolved.
No, but it's just a death march to the end. It's just people realizing like, oh, I want this thing or whatever. Yeah. You know, there was also a scene where we see the support group again. And someone is saying during the support group, this is the line. I had to write this down. This is, they say that the time in heaven is compared to a blink of an eye to us here on Earth. What? Time is a blink of an eye? Like, a blink of an eye is time. Like, what? That means nothing.
And who says that? I mean,
no one said, like, is this heaven experts? Like, is this measured? Like, who has taken the time? Like, that means nothing. Those are just words arranged in an order to mean nothing.
Yeah,
like, they're like, we have three keywords, just put them in a sentence.
That's life is full of people.
So, nonstop. And everybody is always ready to go with the speech, the aphorism, the greeting card sentiment. It just will never stop. One of my favorites, nothing's ever dead if you look at it right.
No, yeah, that was the worst thing. She said that to the dying man.
Nothing's ever dead if you look at it right. Say that to Michael Pena. It's like, I'm going to be dead.
He's rotting from the inside.
He's definitely going to be dead.
Parts of his body are dying now.
But that also is just like, what? Look at it right. How am I look at it right? Like, that's meaningless.
I'm starting to think that naming the movie Collateral Beauty was there like, look, this movie doesn't make sense. Like, nothing we say makes sense.
Say something.
Yeah. Will Smith is now hanging out with the grief counselor.
Yeah, so
person.
This is where we're getting the two or three big twists, depending if you want to say it. So twist number one, Will Smith, okay, goes to visit the grief counselor on Christmas Eve. She's been watching some video of her daughter.
Of
so
her
she's
dead
feeling
daughter, Olivia.
She's been feeling a little rough about her dead daughter, Olivia. She's kind of pushing him a little. She's...
say your daughter's name.
Say your daughter's name. And of course, as it turns out, his daughter's name is Olivia.
She goes to turn on the video that
and
she's
sure
watching.
Enough, there's and Will Smith.
In his dream from earlier.
Playing with dominoes. In the dog park. Like, they just had one video with, like, greatest hits of three places, and, like, she owns it.
And those are like, literally what he dreams.
So those are the only places he goes? Like, is there not a separate video where they went to, like, a roller rink or some shit?
It's that
like,
shit had nothing to do with
we got one video, three different things, three different places, that's it.
And none of those things were symptoms of his depression. Those were the things he did with his child.
Those are just things, right?
Sad with her.
Like, are those the three things that you did?
When I first saw him go look through that window at this group, I was like, oh, his wife, he's watching his wife. This plot twist is only a plot twist if you didn't pay attention to the rest of the movie.
Yeah, like if you were playing on your phone through like most of the second half of this movie, you might look up and be like, whoa.
Wait, that's his wife? Oh, all right.
Okay, crazy. Yeah.
But I love how his dream are literally the memories. Like, I dream about fixing race cars with my old boss. You know what I mean? It's like, that never happened. I dream about going to school in my underwear, which happened once, but it's not what I dream about. He dreams literally those videos.
Just those three things that we cut into one, like, 5-minute supercut of memories.
And she watches
to
over.
Watch over and over. Like,
So,
then, okay, so I guess this is the second of three
twists.
Now it goes back to the flashback of grief. I can't remember her name, but Naomi Harris,
yes,
the actress,
right.
Who's a great actress. And just so anyway, we flash back to her earlier memory when she first heard about Collateral Beauty. And sure enough, the woman on the bench was indeed Helen Mirren. What's kind of crazy is that so when Naomi Harris, the first time earlier when she's talking to Will Smith and she mentions this encounter, it kind of sounds a little callous.
Yeah.
But she's like, no, no, it was amazing. Like, she knew just what to say, and it was just right, and she totally understood it, and she totally got it, right? So now we actually see it play out. We see that entire scene play out, and it seriously plays out just like this. Like, Helen Mirren sits down and is like, who's dying? And she's like, oh, my daughter. Yeah, well, better look at the collateral beauty. Like, it's that, like, callous. Like, her daughter is dying.
Yeah.
And you're just like, appreciate what you've got, bitch. Like, how cold are you? I know you're death, but you're supposed to be nice death, right? Like, they make a point of saying death isn't a bad thing, but that seems pretty fucked up.
Yeah, death is pretty fucked up.
So that's two of three. So now, third big twist. Naomi Harris and Will Smith are walking hand in hand in the park. They're obviously madly in love again. They're not strangers anymore. They're together again. They walk past that bridge that everyone walks past in movies that are shot in Central Park. And there at the top of the bridge are love, time, and death. Because they really are love, time, and death. Who could have saw it except if you like watched the movie and all of the times that basically throughout the movie told you? But yes, they really are love, time, and death, who came down to play a troupe of actors who would then get hired by the business partners of Will Smith to pretend to be actors, pretend to be themselves, to be filmed, to then be taken out of the film so that he'd be crazy, so that he could be sane. You're just your basic average fucking movie, right? That is the end.
And that is the end.
That's
of the
end. Yeah. That's the fucking end of the movie. Oh my goodness. So, final thoughts.
This movie, it tells you a couple times that it's bullshit. I mean, the fucking title of the movie tells you right then and there it's bullshit. Right? Collateral Beauty, whatever.
It's nonsense.
Whatever that is. But that doesn't save the movie. It's trite. It's a Hallmark movie with a big budget.
Yeah.
And I don't even want to say it's a double dare. It's a double dare, but the worst kind of double dare. It's a stay away from, unless you want to sit with your girlfriend and watch her cry.
Yeah. No, don't. Like, we've shared with you the twists in this movie. And there's just no reason for you to go through it on your own. Honestly, it is just, it's very hard. Like, it was hard to sit through, very hard to sit through. Torture, numbing, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, because it's not saying anything. It's not saying anything. Its thoughts on time are like, time, you know, time's great. And then someone will say, like, well, tell time's great to someone who's running late to a meeting.
Yeah.
It's very stupid. And what is really bad is that it wastes so many good actors. You know, like, Kate Winslet is in every third or fourth movie. Edward Norton, it's kind of like, you don't make movies that often, and this was the fucking movie you made that year?
Yeah.
You know, like, he makes one movie a year, maybe. And
I will say, I thought Will Smith brought it. I mean, we just watched Bright, and he's so bored in that movie, but he brought it in this one, I thought.
I guess. I don't know. It's very much of a piece with what Will Smith has done over the last decade, which he, kind of like Tom Cruise, just turned into a very dour presence in movies. And if you look at him, he plays a grieving father in almost every single movie of the last 10 years.
That's,
you know,
his
what I mean?
Thing, right? The Will Smith
it is
trilogy.
Now. It
seven
is
Seconds
now.
And all that shit.
Yeah, but there's even Seven Pounds. Even After Earth, he plays a grieving father. There's this one. There's The Pursuit of Happiness. I think he lost a wife or something like that. He's always somebody who's lost somebody. And it's very like, he's kind of wallowing in the misery.
Right, he lost his self-respect.
But yeah, he's just become a very dour and kind of boring presence when you think about like his kind of persona through the 90s when he was in the early 2000s when he was the biggest star in the world.
Right.
It was fun.
I would have
lively,
loved to see
energetic.
A Will Smith rap that goes along with this.
That's what I was just thinking. It was like they missed a bet, because when you think about the raps for like Wild Wild West and Men in Black, they explain the plot of the movie. Like, I would love to have a rap where he tries to explain what is happening here with, like, Love, Time, and Death filming him.
He just repeats Love, Time, and Death, like, the whole song long. All right. Well, that's all we have for you on this episode of Dare Daniel, but we'll be back next week to review another one of your movie dares.
Until then, send your most sadistic or altruistic movie dares to us at daredaniel.com. Be sure to follow Dare Daniel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Like and rate us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can read more of my movie reviews in the Sacramento News and Review and at newsreview.com. You can read my craft beer column in the Sacramento Bee and at sacbee.com. For Dare Daniel, I am Daniel Barnes. Our producer is Johnny, James is his name, and Flames is game, Flores.
And I'm Corky McDonald saying, love, time.
Death.
Death.
Dead.